namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Sridharma visits Lord Krishna, text number 31. Katschit Guru Kulevasam, Raman Smarasina Yataha,
Raman Smarasina Yataha,
Vijo Vijaya Vigyayam,
Vijo Vijaya Vigyayam,
Tamasa Paramashnute. School. Vasam. Residence. Brahman.
Brahman.
O Brahmana. Smarasi.
You
remember. Now.
Now.
Yataha.
From which?
Spiritual master. Vijaha. A twice born person. Vigyaya. Understanding. Vigyayam.
What needs to be known? Namasaha.
Of ignorance.
Param.
The transcending. Ashnute.
Experiences.
My dear Brahmana, do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a twice born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life which lies beyond all ignorance. Text 32. Savai satkarmanam satshat dvijatir ihasambhavaha ajonga yatra sraminam yataham jnanado guruhu. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, and he who initiates him as a twice-born brahmana and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all the spiritual orders of society is one's ultimate spiritual master. Indeed, he is as good as my own self. Yataham Jnanado Guru. Text 33. Nanvarta Kovida Brahman Vanasramavatam Miha Ye Maya Guru Narvacha Tarantyam Jopavar Navam. Certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Vanasram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence best understand their own true welfare. Purport. One's father is a natural object of reverence, as is a religious leader who initiates one into sacred ceremonies and instructs one in general wisdom. But ultimately, the bona fide spiritual master, learned in the transcendental science and thus able to take one across the ocean of birth and death to the spiritual world, such a guru is most deserving of worship and respect, for he is the direct representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated here. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurumilitam tena tasmahe Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadaha Mahayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karo Ivachalam Pangum Lam Ghayate Girim Yat Kripata Maham Bande Shri Guru Dinatarinam. In order to reassure Sudama that he remembers him, Krishna is reminiscing about the time that they spent together in the Gurukul, because it's explained by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur that when Sudama was being worshipped by Krishna, he was wondering whether Krishna remembered who he was, because they were just friends. You know, it's a very familiar relationship, friendship, wherein one doesn't usually worship another. It's very familiar. Arjuna was upset by his realization that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead after he'd seen the universal form. So he was very fearful of the offenses that he had committed to Krishna, because he was so friendly. You know, they lay down in the same bed together, they would share meals together, they would be joking, and you know, in friendship there's a bit of there's push and shove. This is friendship. So in order to reassure Sudama that he was his friend, he reminded him, do you remember when we spent time together in school? And Prabhupada explains how the Vedic system is such that at a very young age, usually 5 years of age, then the children of the brahmanas and the kshatriyas and the wealthy vaishyas would go to the ashram of the qualified teacher for training in very austere circumstances. Basically, brahmacharya means austerity. Well, one of the things it means is austerity. Simple living. Study of the Vedas, svadhyaya. This is one of the important functions, if you like, of the ashram. Recitation and study of the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master in simple circumstances, in a simple environment, for training in discipline, sensual control, mental control, study of the Vedas, living simply. And, you know, whether one was a king's son or the son of a poor brahmana, they're all treated equally for this training. Prabhupada points out how rigid that system was, that the disciples would go to beg alms would bring them then back to the spiritual master, and it was considered to be the property of the guru, and even if the meal is cooked, Prabhupada, I was just listening to a class yesterday, Prabhupada was saying, even if the meal is cooked, the disciple has collected the grains and the rice and the sabjis and so forth from the householders, who would give in charity. But even if the meal was cooked, it was collected and cooked by the disciple, they wouldn't eat until being requested by the guru. And Prabhupada chuckles, actually, and the devotees laugh, because, you know. Here, the devotees can hardly wait for the offering to get off. In fact, they can't wait for the offering to get off the altar. Unfortunately. But here's the standard that one is requested to come and eat by the guru. And Prabhupada makes a point. If the guru doesn't invite the disciple to eat, then he doesn't eat. So how rigid a system is that? In fact, we see how we're actually quite removed from the Vedic age. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but we couldn't hope to emulate that kind of discipline and sense and self-control. This was the environment that Krishna and Sudama were brought up in, if you like. So a very close relationship in the Brahmachari Ashram and the Brahmacharini Ashram. Devotees live a very simple life. Even still, we may not be as rigid as this Vedic system, but even still, living in the Brahmachari Ashram, living in the Brahmacharini Ashram, is still a great opportunity to learn these principles, to imbibe these principles of sense control, self-control, that everything belongs to Krishna, basically, that it's not mine. Idam Krishnaya idam na mama. This belongs to Krishna, it doesn't belong to me. So when we go and collect, or if we're doing some service, then we basically, the meditation of the devotee is, I'm doing this for my spiritual master, I'm doing this for Krishna. That's one of the reasons why we have the deity worship in the temple, and everything is focused around pleasing the deities. Because ultimately the spiritual master is meant to train us to do everything for Krishna. It's not that we're doing it for the spiritual master per se. We're doing it for the spiritual master, not because of his personal qualification, if you like. Well, certainly, it is because of the personal qualification of the spiritual master, but because the spiritual master is doing everything for Krishna. The idea, we're following in the footsteps of the spiritual master, and we're following the spiritual master's instructions. But the spiritual master is not saying, serve me. The spiritual master is teaching, serve Krishna. No? And in that sense, then we follow the spiritual master, because he's following Krishna, following Krishna's instructions. So the ashram, especially the single person's ashram, is it's austere, and that can be painful sometimes. You know, you wake up in the morning and you want to go and do something and somebody's lying there. But you thought you would do what you wanted to do and you go, oh, what's going on here? But it is austere. You have to live with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11, 12 other people. Certainly made me appreciate my own room with my own space and not being woken up by, you know, 5 other alarm clocks all going off at 2:30 in the morning and nobody getting up. We're going to get up really early in the morning. Everybody else gets woken up except the person who sets the alarm. And then there's all sorts of other things, snoring and this and that and the other. So austere. But actually it's character forming, because we have to, you know, one of the great advantages of living in a community of devotees, despite the inconvenience, is we learn to appreciate the good qualities of others. Because we get to see, you know, when you live very closely with somebody, then you really know the person intimately. And usually that means you know all of their bad qualities too. Intimately. But as devotees, we concentrate on the good qualities. Krishna is described as gunagrahi, which means he appreciates the good qualities in everybody. Adosha darshi, he doesn't see the faults. So we have to learn to really appreciate the good qualities of the Vaishnavas. When we live very closely with them, then we know all the bad qualities. But as Prabhupada points out, we're not like flies, you know, we don't go to the stool, but rather we're like the bumblebee, and we look for the good qualities in the person. And there's a reason for that, because as Prabhupada points out, the devotees are on the path of perfection. You know, if we're all Paramahamsas, then there will be no need for us to perform any sadhana or even a chant Hare Krishna or, you know, to do any of these things. But we're not. But because the devotee has a very sincere attitude towards applying themselves to the path of Krishna consciousness, even though there may be some discrepancies or some faults, still that application to the sadhana, that dedication to chanting Hare Krishna, that desire to worship Krishna, serve the order of the spiritual master, that is recognized as the paramount quality, the top quality. And of course, as has been mentioned here, somebody who has received that blessing, if you like, Krishna says here, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak, best understand their own welfare. And Krishna says, the words I speak through the Guru, through the spiritual master, because the spiritual master is Krishna's representative. So the devotees look to the good qualities of others and appreciate those. Not that we're blind to the faults, but we emphasize the good. And Krishna points out in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that in due course of time one will become perfect as a result of applying themselves to the process of devotional service. So Krishna is reminding Sudama of their time in school together. Then he glorifies the position of the spiritual master. And he makes the point that there are traditionally three types of gurus. The first guru is our parents. And here describes the father, the one who gives us our birth and our initial training and education, and should be respected. You know, we should respect our parents because of the fact that they've given us an opportunity to take birth, and they took on the responsibility of nurturing and nourishing and protecting us. And in that regard, in that sense, then giving us an opportunity to engage in devotional service. So that's our first birth, if you like. You know, there is the definition of dvija, those who are twice born, and you know, dvija is also it's a name for a bird, for birds also called dvija, because birds also have two births, interestingly enough. You know, when they're born in the egg, out they come from the mother. But then they're still, you know, still in the womb almost, if you, in one sense. And so then their second birth is when they break out of that egg, out of the shell. So, the second birth is an opportunity to break out of the material conception, break out of the material universe, if you like. We take our birth from our parents, but then we're still bound up in this universe made up of the material energy. And the second birth is an opportunity to realize our spiritual identity. Now, that's not always, in the traditional system of things, that's not always an opportunity to be engaged in devotional service. In the traditional Vedic system, one is given the Upanayanam ceremony, especially in the higher castes. But then, that doesn't mean engagement in devotional service, because as we know from the very ritualistic adherence of the Vedic principles, there can be worship of demigods, that has to be done by the Brahmanas, there can be study of the Vedas, but that doesn't necessarily conclude in devotional service. That can conclude in an impersonal understanding of the Supreme. So that's why Krishna mentions here three stages of guru: the parent, then those who initiate one into the Brahminical culture, if you like. But he says, of all of the gurus, the most important is that person who instructs us in the science of self-realization. In other words, in the process of pure devotional service. That's the most important of all of the gurus. Of course, we can be very fortunate. Our parents, who were the first guru, can also instruct us in the process of devotional service. And of course, we can even be more fortunate in the sense that the person who gives us our Brahminical, the Upanayanam ceremony, they also instruct us. And in fact, you know, we have that system pretty much within ISKCON, where everybody, practically speaking, is instructing us in the process of devotional service. Interesting, that's another point when I think about it, you know. And Prabhupada makes this point that anybody who gives us instruction in devotional service and helps us should be respected as one's guru, one's spiritual master, or one's siksha guru. We tend to emphasize the diksha guru somewhat, but we see the way Prabhupada structured ISKCON that actually he put a lot of emphasis on siksha, because Prabhupada was in a position where, you know, in the early days of ISKCON, he instructed his disciples personally. But as ISKCON expanded and became a very big organization, he couldn't do that. And then he basically gave instructions for the devotees: read my books, you know, study my books. That way you'll get my personal instruction. He said, if you have any questions, then ask the senior devotees, ask the temple president, ask the GBC. In this way, Prabhupada set up a system of siksha. Actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's mentioned that the siksha guru should be respected and worshipped on the same level as the diksha guru, because actually they're equal. They're not different. So anybody who instructs us in... And here, Krishna says that also. You know, one's father is a natural object of reverence. We should be respectful. Usually, we should be respectful to our parents. That culture is much more predominant in a place like India than it is in the Western. Yes, I used to think my father was a bit of a dope. In fact, I would tell him so. He didn't appreciate it. He didn't appreciate my appreciation of him. You know, it wasn't until I turned 35 or 40 that I realised actually my father wasn't a bad fellow, and he knew what he was talking about. So, you know, we would normally be respectful to our parents because we appreciate what they've done for us. Certainly we should be respectful of, you know, the person who initiates us. Obviously we should be respectful to that. And, you know, the whole system is designed in such a way. But interestingly enough here, it stated or emphasized that that person, yataham jnanadoguru, that person who gives knowledge of myself and speaks my instructions, and they should be respected also as being as good as me, Krishna says. Another reason why we should respect the devotees is because practically speaking, every devotee has some realization of Krishna consciousness and has the capacity to advise and guide others. Certainly, if devotee has been following the process of devotional service, adhering to the order of the spiritual master, and serving Krishna steadily for some time, then they'll have realizations. Well, hopefully they'll have realizations. And they should make advancement. We should make progress. You know, Prabhupada teaches us in his books how to apply the science of Krishna consciousness so we'll all make advancement. You know, it wasn't Prabhupada's idea that only a few people would be very advanced and then everybody else would just be like stupid or wouldn't make progress in devotional service. And it's interesting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was approached by Korma the Brahmana, who wanted to take sannyas, Korma the Brahmana wanted to take sannyas and travel with Lord Chaitanya, who was so affectionately attracted and inspired by the association of Mahaprabhu, that he wanted to leave home and travel with him. And Lord Chaitanya said to him, no. And a famous verse, Prabhupada quotes this verse, Yare deka tare paha Krishna upadesh. He said, no, stay here. Stay here, remain as a householder, perform your occupational duties. He was mentioned by followers of the Varnashram. So it's recommended we, you know, we don't have to immediately give up everything and take the renounced order of life to become advanced, if you like, or to instruct others, but rather one should apply oneself to the process of devotional service, learning that from the spiritual master, learning that from the, and when I say spiritual master, not just the Diksha Guru, but our Siksha, because most often we get instruction, more instruction from devotees other than those who initiate us. In reality, that's what happens. Or we get instruction from Prabhupada in his books, and then amongst ourselves we discuss it, realize it, and then put it into practice. So, Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Korma the Brahmana were, stay here, but then whoever you meet, preach. Yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Instruct everybody about Krishna consciousness. Then he said, you'll become a guru. In that way you'll become a guru, a spiritual master, or an instructor. And then Lord Chaitanya said, in that way then you will be with me. And that's really what Prabhupada wanted us to be. Prabhupada wanted us to be this type of personality that Krishna is praising here. People who give others an opportunity to become Krishna conscious, to engage in devotional service, to realize their potential as an individual, as a spiritual, not just a material being, but as a spiritual being. The bona fide spiritual master, learned in the transcendental science, One who's able to take others across the ocean of birth and death, basically, to the spiritual world. That's what Prabhupada wanted us to be. His representatives. But in being his representatives, being Krishna's representatives, actually. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, such a person is more dear to me than he. There is no person more dear to me than he who explains this science of the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. Says that here. In fact, Krishna says such a person is so. They're not different to me. Ye maya guruna vacha. Those who follow my instructions given by the spiritual master, they're the most fortunate. And that's why the spiritual master is given a very elevated position and given a position of respect. And why we should respect the devotees. Because practically speaking, every devotee represents Krishna. And of course, those who more clearly or more transparently present, the more pure that a devotee presents Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then the more respect we give them. That's our system. But of course, it's still valid that we respect everybody. Trinada Pisa Hishnina Amanina, what is it? No, Torora Pisa Hishnina Amanida Amanida. We're not looking for respect for ourselves, but we should be giving respect to all others, practically speaking. But what to speak of those who are elevated and are able to enthuse us by their instructions and by their ability to represent Krishna? We give them more consideration, if you like. So, Krishna is reminding Sudama of his friendship with him, his relationship with him, so that Sudama is reassured, and then he glorifies the opportunity that they got and the mercy that they got from that association with their spiritual master, and glorifies those persons who faithfully represent himself. You know, when Krishna here says that the guru is not different from himself, it doesn't mean the guru should then think, I'm as good as God. This is dangerous. Right? The devotee shouldn't think, yes. Even though Krishna says they're as good as him, the devotee should not think. We have to be quite careful, you know, not think, I'm as good as God. It's a bit of a problem. It can create a bit of a problem. But it's very interesting when we see how Krishna deals with Sudama. He's not thinking, you know, I am God, and so therefore, you know, you should all worship me. Well, Krishna instructs that. But what does he do when Sudama Brahmana, his friend, comes, then Krishna worships him. So even though Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, isn't it? And of course everybody should worship him. When it comes to his dealings, and these are the dealings that we should follow, and as the spiritual master, or basically the leaders of society, that's what Prabhupada wanted us to be, then actually our business is to render service, just like Krishna is rendering service to his friend. So we should also be in that mood. So the spiritual master is in the mood of rendering service to his disciples. And Prabhupada was in that mood. Even though, you know, the spiritual master instructs the disciple, do what I tell you to do, still he's doing that, and this is a very subtle point, that he's doing it in the mood of service to his disciples. And you know, sometimes the guru will test the disciple. He may even get angry. May chastise. Right? Even we may get chastised from time to time by the devotees. And when we get chastised, they're told to do something difficult, then we get offended. Ugh, what are you asking me to do that for? What are you picking on me for? I'm a very advanced devotee. Don't you recognize my good qualities? But actually, it is the responsibility of those in positions of authority, especially in those in positions of like the spiritual master, to sometimes test the disciples. But the guru or the spiritual teacher is doing that in the mood of service to the disciples, service to the devotees. So we shouldn't misunderstand that. Or reduce our appreciation of the spiritual master because sometimes he might chastise us or, you know, test us. The idea is to maintain that idea of service to Krishna, service to the devotees. And the spiritual master, even though he's the representative of God, actually he's not, you know, Prabhupada, I've given this example many times, Prabhupada's example, you know, when he was criticized by the reporters and they're saying, you know, why is everybody bowing down to you? Why a Rolls Royce? Why are they giving you a Rolls Royce? And Prabhupada said, you know, Rolls Royce, what's that? What's a Rolls Royce? Nothing. For the representative of God, we should have a golden chariot. You know, we should have something very wonderful. But Prabhupada made the point, you know, as a spiritual master, as a representative of God, I am collecting obeisances like the tax collector collects taxes. But the tax collector doesn't keep the money for himself, he gives it to the king. So the spiritual master may be given obeisances all of the time, but it's not for him. It's for Krishna. And so they collect this, but he's not thinking, oh, they're all paying obeisances to me. Good. But rather, they're offering their obeisances to and I'm passing them on to Krishna. And that's purity. We could see that didn't sway Srila Prabhupada. Whereas in his antecedents, sometimes we've seen that even though people have taken on the role of guru, that actually the position, due to lack of purity, then it, you know, they started to think that they were in a position, in an elevated position, whereas the spiritual master should keep himself humble, thinking, yes, I'm the servant of the devotees. I may be Krishna's representative, but that doesn't mean I'm as good as Krishna, although I have become God. This is danger. This is a very precarious situation in one sense, and underlines responsibility for us if we're going to represent. If we're going to be devotees, and I'm assuming that we're all aspiring to be devotees, But then the big responsibility for us is that we have to actually represent Krishna purely. Challenge, it's a challenge for us. But that's what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted us to be his representatives, and ultimately that means being Krishna's representative. And that then means transmitting or giving Krishna consciousness to others. And then, you know, in doing that, then this is what happens actually. Then people will become respectful. People are respectful of the devotees. That's natural. Is recommended, in fact. But we are then authorized to receive that respect and worship, but on behalf of Krishna, not on our own behalf. And in maintaining our allegiance to Krishna and Prabhupada, then and acting as the transparent, you know, representative, then we put ourselves in a position where we can take others out of birth and death. We can get out ourselves for a start, but we can help others. I'm not finished here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Krishna and Sudama, and they were friends. So yeah. Now even Sudama was aware of that. So how did he take service from Krishna while washing his feet? What was?
Well, that was his concern. He said, "Does Krishna recognize who I am? Does he remember me?" See, in the Vedic culture, as I understand it, it is the duty of the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas and the Sudras to worship the Brahmanas. Right? So when Sudama came, Krishna very respectfully worshipped him. So for Sudama, that's not unusual because he's a Brahmana. But he's thinking, does Krishna remember that I'm his friend? That we went to school together.
So the conversation comes after taking after.
Yeah, after the puja, he did it. You know. And like I said, you know, Arjuna was concerned when he realized who Krishna was, and for all of the familiarity and closeness of his friendship, and therefore then the offences that he may have committed, because in a very friendly relationship then there's that awe and reverence is not there. And even with our parents, so there's another point, you know, with our parents, we respect our parents, but you know, our parents are practically speaking our servants. Do you know what I mean? The parents serve, actually, even the guru serves his disciples, actually, when you think about it. But ordinarily, when we grow up, then we serve our parents. In exchange, there's an exchange going on, if you like. But even though there's that service, and, you know, we should be respectful to our parents, at the same time there's a certain degree of familiarity. Because I guess it depends on what kind of relationship you have with your parents. I remember I used to fight with my dad and play cricket with him and football, and you know, he's like a friend. Did you ever do that with your father? Yeah? I mean, some had authoritarian parents who, you know, just like the big boss, but I know with my father I had a very close friendship. We used to fight and play. That's what dads are for. And give us your money. Come on, dad, give us your money. And that way, and because the parent, you know. What I didn't understand was, you know, dad was paying for the electricity, the gas, the food, the clothes, the school, all that stuff. And I was thinking, come on, you never give me any money. And he's thinking, I'm working, you know, I'm killing myself for you guys. So it's a very, you know, close, affectionate relationship. And so sometimes that over, you know, because that close affection overrides the respect. Right? With the spiritual master, however, the, you know, one has to remain in a very respectful position all the time, so that one doesn't commit offences. But in this particular case, Sudama's wondering, why is Krishna treating me so respectfully when I'm just his friend? Does he remember who I am? Anything else? Actually, when you think about it, familiarity does breed contempt. We live very closely, and so then we tend to minimize the relationships that we have. But it's interesting here where Krishna had a close and familiar relationship with Sudama, but he chose to emphasize the fact that we should be respectful to even to our friends. Interestingly enough, it's quite a formal setting. Of course, you know, Krishna is the king in Dwarka at this point in time, and Sudama is a very, very poor Brahmana. Very poor. So these relationships in Dwarka tend to be more awe and reverential and more formal between Krishna and the devotees. Whereas we see, you know, the real intimate and affectionate dealings between Krishna and the devotees in Vrindavan, where his friends say, come on, fight me. Right? You couldn't fight your way out of a wet paper bag. Come on. And they don't, you know, they're not into, you are the supreme personality of Godhead. Or even if they are, they still, you know, their affectionate dealings override any sense of awe and reverence that they might have for Krishna. They don't have that. And here in this relationship with Sudama Vipra, even though Krishna is his close friend, they went to school together, still there's a very formal environment in which they're associating with each other. Anything else?
Well, tell me what the reflection of their voice is. Something that mean to say that there's no demons in the spiritual world, it's just, there's just talk of demons? So what's that reflection of, you know, that pure violent space that's promoting the new world?
Well, they're persons, and they have their individuality, and so their reflections of that personality and individuality, but because they're demons, then they get to exercise that individuality in another place where they can't create disturbances. So their personality, their individuality, their identity is intact. But because it's perverted, it's improper. Therefore it gets reflected in the material world. They're not. They're serving. Right? But they're not serving Krishna, they're serving their own misconceptions, and so therefore they have to render their service indirectly through the material energy, through the material, and so that service is a reflection, and it's manifest, if you like, in the material realm because of that perversion. But you know, the individuality, the relationships, the dealings and so forth, that they're a reflection of the pure relationships and dealings in the spiritual realm. But because they're selfish, because the living entity is thinking, I'm the enjoyer and I'm the central point here, then it has to be manifest through the material, and that's where its imperfection lies, if you like, any of the imperfections. So because it's being diffused, if you like, or refracted through the material energy, then that's its fault. That's the faulty part, is the mentality of the living entity. But the relationships and the interactions and the dealings are all a reflection of the pure dealings in the spiritual realm. Does that make sense? It's not that, you know, this bad thing here has a reflection equal to something in the spiritual realm. Not quite like that. The fault is in the mentality of the individuals in the material world. That's why they're put into the material world, okay? Got a faulty mentality? Go and clean up your act down here. You're not welcome here in the spiritual world. We have another place for you. It's called prison. It's a wonderful prison in that everybody thinks they're free. But actually it's a place of rectification. Oh, that's not fair. Sorry. Do not pass go. Do not collect 200. Go directly to jail. Basically. There is this misconception that everybody in the material world is innocent. I didn't do anything. That's what everybody says. But every criminal says that. You ask every criminal in jail, I didn't do anything. I was framed. It was the other guy's fault. Oh, this one dobbed me in or whatever. Oh, it was my upbringing, it was my mum and dad, it was my school, it was my friends, it's everybody else's fault but ours. than the material world. But that's the fault. The faulty bit is our motivation, our attitude. And the attitude is no longer a loving service to Krishna and the devotees, but rather the attitude is, you know, what's in it for me? That's the fault. A bit of envy. I want what you've got. Not only that, I don't want you to have it. That's envy. So that enviousness comes out in the very mean and nasty behaviours that we inflict on ourselves and others. So that, you know, you can say, oh, he's behaving in a negative way, so where's that in the spiritual world? It's not quite like that. Certain relationships and feelings and so forth, we can see the reflection. Mahatmaji.
I want to comment about the relationship, the loving relationship between Krishna and Sudama.
Yes.
It's so great.
Yes.
That when Sudama comes and the water is brought to wash his feet,
yeah.
Actually, Lord Krishna is washing his feet with tears.
Mm.
It's very nice. Pani parat ko chhiyo nahi, naina liye pad se pad hoy. The meaning is that such an extreme position of the Supreme Personality is topmost, as you know. And Sudama is just a devotee, of course, a very high class devotee. But this is such. Similarly, when we are in a position, a high position, we have to treat all our subjects in a very compassionate and loving way.
Yes.
So that nobody is hurt.
Well, hang on a second. I disagree. No, not necessarily. As a parent, did you just let your children do what they liked?
You tried to put it as possible.
Yes. But did you do that? Did you just let them do what they liked?
No, we are trying to.
No. No, you didn't. Did you ever make your daughter cry?
She has to cry sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly. She's still crying on occasion. You know, we would say to Krishna, how it's really not fair that you've created the material world in the way that you have. You should be accommodating everybody. And Krishna's saying, yes, I am. But because of the way that you behave, then you get in trouble and create the misfortune for yourself. Right? So sometimes the spiritual master or a spiritual teacher, guide, has to be firm with the disciple. Sometimes we have to be firm with people. Not that we try to make everybody happy, because they'll do silly things. They do silly things. And so sometimes you have to draw the line. We have rules. We have guidelines. We have a governing body for that purpose. They make rules and gives us guidelines. Then what happens? I'll tell you what happens. Then a person in authority tries to maintain those principles. Then when you do, people criticize you. They say, what are you doing that for? You should be doing what I want. This happens to me quite often. And I think, I've got to keep everybody happy. But at the same time, I've also got to have a standard of a spiritual achievement within our community. Right? For, as an example. So So I disagree. Not that we try to make everybody, certainly we try to make everybody happy. And how we do that is say, here's our level of spiritual achievement that's been set for us. Now let's all try to get up to that level. Then we'll be happy. But if we undermine our spiritual standards, I can assure you, we will not be happy. And you know why we won't be happy? Because we won't be following the order of our guru. Huh? A very important point. It's okay to say we should be making everybody happy. Sure, we should. But we've got to do that by following the order of the spiritual master, which means, okay, he set a bar up here. Here's what you do. Chant 16 rounds. Follow the principles. Engage in service. Organize the society in this way and that way and another way. What happens in our society is when the person in responsibilities does that, then they say, not fair, you're not doing what I want, you should be pleasing everybody. But that's my point. My point was, and just like you, when you chastise your daughter, say for example, you did that because you had love and affection for her. Right?
When she cries, she draws more sympathy. And more love.
Yeah, but you still hold your ground. Otherwise then you're not doing your duty. And certainly we're affectionate, there's no doubt about that. We should not, we all stomp around the place just treading on people's toes. Obviously, that's just stupid. But we have to, in our society, also learn to appreciate that when somebody is being firm with us, that's also a sign of their affection for us, not that they dislike us. Because otherwise, that kind of behaviour is just like the child saying, I hate you, Daddy. You're mean and nasty. Mum and Dad's like that, aren't they, did you? Huh? Yeah, see you. He nodded to me first. Yeah, because you're all here, so. I can read the head nod. First of all, head nod, then water.
Lord Krishna is extremely kind and compassionate.
Very.
Absolutely.
Yes, very. That's why he sends us to the material world. And why we suffer. Out of his kindness. That is a very, very hard concept for people to get their head around. And what makes a very advanced devotee. You know, there's that verse it's in the 10th. Tateno kampam susamiksha mano. That, you know, whenever there is some great difficulty, then the devotee accepts it with humility. And actually accepts it as being only just a fraction of what he deserves. Huh? When there's some difficulty, there's some struggle or some trial, then the devotee takes that, Krishna, this is your mercy on me, but really it's only just a little, it's a fraction of what I really deserve.
Token.
It's just a token. And so he accepts it with Hridvag Vapubhir, with heart and with words and with body. He offers his obeisances to Krishna. Krishna, please let me accept your mercy. And then what does Krishna say? Actually, it's Lord Brahma who's making this statement. He says, those devotees who accept the difficulties that they face with that kind of mentality, then liberation is their what's the word? It's their rightful, it's their inheritance. They inherit. Of course, was it Gopinath Acharya? Gopinath Acharya, or was it one of the Goswamis? I can't remember. They altered the verse and changed it to bhakti as opposed to mukti. Lord Chaitanya chastised him. I can't remember the exact personality, whether it was one of the Goswamis or whether it was Gopinath Acharya. But basically, you know, liberation is the rightful, is the inheritance of a devotee who accepts the chastisements. Where we have difficulty is we can't see Krishna behind the devotees. And we think, oh, it's just you. You're doing this to me. But sometimes we have to see, actually there's Krishna's hand in this. And Krishna wants something from me. And our sincerity is measured by that searching within and looking for what Krishna wants from us. And sometimes that's very hard to see, you know, because we pray, oh, magyana dimaran, you know, I'm in ignorance. So we have to see this. Do you have some realization in this matter?
Yeah, with the child thing.
Yes.
I remember when my daughter was born, I said to my brother-in-law that I'll never hit her. Or make her cry. And he laughed at me. Yeah, I've never hit her. I've done that. And it's like, you might miss a point a couple of times, but it wasn't out of like ostracizing her for the correction.
Yeah, that's some parents never learn the art of parenting. Many do, of course, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't all be here. But it is a subtle thing.
Yeah, I sort of thought that you catch more flies with honey than vinegar. Instead of hitting her, you know, try and reward her when she did something good.
Yeah, that's good. But every now and again, you know, parents have to discipline their children. Is that right, Chaitan?
Yes.
How often a day?
Once at
least. Once at least, he says. Once at least. At least. Where's Pinky? Not here. We'll find out how many times she reckons. Dad reckons once a day, we'll find out what Mum reckons. Mum used to chastise us, but after a while, I think by the time we got to 8 or 9, you know, it was just useless. Mum used to pull the wooden spoon out of the drawer, and we just laugh. Ah, you're gonna hit me with that. Then Mum would say, "Wait till Dad comes home. Uh-oh, we're in trouble now."
Lord Vishwanatha said to Lord that until the child turns 7 years of age, you're not supposed to say anything to them, because until the Brahma possession is done, they're actually Lord Krishna. So you must not say a word to them, but it really doesn't happen. Now the first one is half an hour ago. But it's serious.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one.
Until the Brahma possession is done. It is like that.
You don't instruct your children?
No. You're not supposed to. Yeah.
Well, this is, you know, might I make a comment here that if the parents are very, and you know, it's probably an indication of just how far removed we are from Vedic culture and from a society when you could do that, right? When you could do that, because you know, in this day and age, if you just let your kids, and I've seen it, where you just let the kids do what they like, then they're irascible monsters. No, can be and are. And part of that is because of this, you know, that kind of philosophy. Oh no, don't, you know, don't harm them, don't instruct them, don't tell them off. You got this little monster screaming around the place, thumping everybody, doing what he likes, throwing tantrums, you know, just laughing and smiling. How cute. No, we wouldn't do that. And then, you know, when it's, and see, here's what happens when the kids go to school and their behavior gets modified pretty quickly.
Exactly.
By the other kids, you thump me, okay, thump back. Right? So I don't know. There's the principle, which is good, and we should try to adhere to that, but then there's, you know, the cold face. There's reality.
I mean, for that, she gets it from us almost, well, from the service.
There you go. Five or six times over here. His boy must be much better than yours. Only once here. What about, no, we won't put a digit on the spot. And, you know, if, say for example, if the teachers at school didn't discipline our children, we'd be upset. One of the reasons why, and I would suggest, one of the reasons why the children are given to the guru is because the parents then, you know, don't have, you know, they have that loving affection and nurturing and so forth, but at some point you've got to straighten the kid out. Okay, send him off to the guru. Right? And then the guru fixes him up. So then there's always the loving relationship with the parents, right? But the parents get the guru to do the hard work. Right? Oh, look at our lovely boy. Oh, what a wonderful kid he is. The guru is thinking, oh, you can have him for the holidays. I've had enough of him. The little angel that he might be, we've got to straighten out some of the other kinks that he's got in his character. Over, you know, the over, I think the point that Dave is making, and it's a very good point, you know, we should have that overarching sense of affection and love for our children. And, you know, unfortunately in this day and age, there are many parents who are just despotic or even neglectful and, you know, just exploitative, unfortunately, due to, you know, perhaps bad parenting in their childhood or whatever. Yeah. You know, I reckon every time my father chastised me, I definitely deserved it. Definitely. He was fair. My father was fair. And you know, by the time I got to teenage life, I knew exactly what I had to say just to flip my father on a footprint. I knew exactly what, you know, you learn exactly what to do and say to somebody to get them angry. And we're like that too, even in our association of the devotees. We live very closely with each other, and especially in the ashrams. And we know exactly what to do to each other just to upset each other. That's why living in the ashram is such a wonderful opportunity to develop Vaishnava qualities, because you shouldn't do that. We shouldn't do that. We should learn how to appreciate and to show affection and appreciation and love, really. You know, not all cuddly love, but real love and affection, which is based on substantial and deep relationships in service to Krishna.
When I was in Gurukul, there was a stage where my mother would never hit me at home, but at Gurukul I would become a bit of a disturbance in the class, and
no,
every day for a few years at 1 o'clock I'd get sent to the principal Mother of Mulari had to get slapped across the face. Everyone was so scared. Mother of Mulari, she had two big brown marks on her forehead. And she's actually quite a nice lady, I don't know. But the first few times I was scared, but after a while this just became a part of the fun. And that's how it is with kids. After a while, it's just there's not that much you can do to stop them, and it just comes as part of the punishment.
The punishment, yeah, a bit of attention.
Yeah.
The blackboard ruler. Yeah, that's it's an unfortunate indictment of Kali Yuga kids and parents, for that matter, because the parents produce the kids. You mean you were naughty at school?
Not really naughty.
Not really naughty.
A bit cheeky.
Huh?
Just like that, yeah.
Yeah, I figured that much. Alright, we should have some prasadam, I think. Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Siddhama Vipra Ki Jai.
I'm going to go to the next one.